She's a registered Republican? Oh, now I love her ad. Is that right? Is Sydney Sweeney? You'd be surprised at how many people are Republicans. I'm glad you told me that. If Sydney Sweeney is a registered Republican, I think her ad is fantastic.
Zach Abraham, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. I want to talk about American Eagle, which is hilarious because I was saying I haven't been there in like 20 years. And then I decided to go in and buy a pair of jeans. And I was like the oldest human being in there. But I did it because they didn't cave to the woke mob. But you last week at Bulwark Capital thought maybe that's a stock we want to buy.
Yeah. So definitely not a recommendation to anybody else. And don't do what we do just because we may not own it 5 days from now. So don't. Go into that. But before we go on, what was it like in the store where you were there? Was there a decent amount of foot traffic? Were there people in there?
Well, the mall was dead. Like, I went into a mall, and this is a total different conversation.
This mall
was the saddest place I've ever been. I'm not going to call out the specific mall. But so there's not a lot of people in the mall as it is. It was sort of, but it was a weird time of day and all of that. But I definitely felt like my American Eagle years are probably behind me. But, you know, for the cause, I bought a pair of jeans. And they had the big Sydney Sweeney ad, like, right when you walk in the door. And in a state like Washington, you know, I'm sure they got some haters.
So a couple reasons why we did what we did. So first of all, the stock was very beat down in terms of price. It was trading at about... one-third the valuation of the overall market, if not slightly less than that. We picked it up and it was paying almost a 4.5% dividend at that time. And when you look at it, that's a stock that we put in what we refer to as like our value with a catalyst. Because a lot of times you can find these assets that are beat down, right? But there may not be something that's going to get them to jump up in value. You need something to happen that changes people's perception of that stock and gets it re-rated, right? Or else what can end up happening is you just sit on that stock for a really long time and you buy it when it's cheap and it gets a little cheaper while you own it and you don't make any money, right? So when we saw the ad campaign, first of all, I thought it was a brilliant ad campaign. I thought they picked a really good person to do it. I think she connects perfectly with their demographic. And then when you saw the pushback against it, that to me is when it got really interesting. And when we finally pulled the trigger on it, because I think this stuff is already actually, I think it's already kind of gone and retroactively. I think this whole thing's flipped in reverse. Mm-hmm. I think that had to be, and I'm really trying to think, Brandy, when I say this, but that had to be the most ridiculous woke mob reach I've seen yet. Like, she's like the quintessential Americana girl,
yeah,
right? You know, she's wearing denim from toes to shoulders, right?
Except around the bust. No denim to be found there.
That's right.
Well, yes.
Again, I said Americana.
Yes, right.
I mean, you know, yeah. So, and then, you know, then it's her jeans, which was spelled with a J. Where somehow that's a Nazi dog whistle. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that was, I mean, you've seen a lot of big reaches by the woke folks. I think that's one, but I think it's symbolic of where they're at. Meaning, I think their parade is over. And I think that when you see these ridiculous woke reactions, I think they're engendering the exact opposite reaction that they're hoping occurs.
Well, 100%. I didn't buy, and one of the things I think is funny is the eugenics. They've now jumped on, they learn a new word, and now a word they'd never heard of before, by the way. They didn't know anything about, and now it's like, eugenics.
Eugenics. Did American Eagle just run an ad for eugenics?
It's fucking eugenics.
Does Sydney Sweeney know just how eugenicist and awful that ad was?
The eugenics coded language in that Sydney Sweeney ad.
The eugenics are right in front of your face.
Let's all get abortions. The more abortions that are, the better. Eugenics is evil. And you're like, I'm so confused right now. I thought you loved Margaret Sanger. Now you're telling me you don't. Which one is it? You guys, yeah, eugenics is the new word of the day. But, you know, are you familiar with the parent of North American eugenics? Are you aware that that woman came up with the terminology pro-choice? I just, you can't, I,
No.
and it wasn't even about it, I'm sure you probably come at it a different, you come at it a similar way. It's not even me taking an opportunity to stick it to somebody that disagrees with, it's not even trying to get into the pro-choice, pro-life debate, right? It's more illustrating, you people are so stupid, you don't even know your own platform.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't even know what it is that you actually believe from one day to the next.
No, they don't. And so it wasn't even like that meltdown was nice, but like I'm not going to buy a pair of jeans or buy a product every time the left melts down about something. It was the fact that American Eagle wouldn't cave and they released a
Right.
statement standing by Sydney Sweeney in the ad. And then I'm like, okay, I'll spend a little money at your business and buy a pair of jeans that I'll probably wear like once every other month or something. Because it wasn't the ad. Like, if I had just seen that ad and everything, I wouldn't have gone to American Eagle to buy jeans over it. If it
Right,
had just
right.
been the screeching leftists about eugenics, wouldn't have gone to American Eagle. But it's the, I need to, I feel the need now more than ever as we're digging ourselves out of this weird woke period to support companies who, even though American Eagle isn't perfect, I mean, they've been, you know, wokey at times too, to support companies with my money who are going to just say, no, we're not engaging in that.
Yeah, no, and it's something that I think that we actually, and it's funny you bring this up because I was actually just going to tell my wife, and it was in between things because I did another interview too, but I was going to tell my wife, hey, let's put some of the kids back to school orders through American Eagle. We need to start voting with our pocketbooks, and you need to vote. And I think it's more important that you vote in the positive than you do in the negative. Meaning, I think it's more important,
Yeah.
even if you don't like the company, if you see a company tacking in the right direction, we all need to recognize we're at a free market, we're Americans, right? The just like it happens with us, what drives nothing pushes the needle like money. And so when you see something like that, I think one of the easiest ways to try to have a positive impact on the culture is to turn around and vote with your pocketbook,
Yeah.
right? Sit and for the most part, I didn't have an issue supporting American Eagle because I didn't think the ad was inappropriate in any way. There was that little flash on the chest, but she said, "Hey, eyes up here." You know what I mean? So, and to your point, I think it's more important that we do respond with our pocketbooks because, everybody's going to see what happened on that ad, and you should see it because you've got abilities to track their online traffic and their sales traffic. That ad campaign hit, their sales have gone like this
Oh,
already.
yeah.
I mean, they're parabolic.
Well, it was so the shares had declined 36% on the year until this ad came out. It says the stock jumped as much as 16%, this biggest gain intraday since May 12th. Do you think that that has to do with just the increased sort of brand recognition as a result of all of this? Or do you think it's because Donald Trump was out there being like, those jeans are flying off the shelf? It's the hottest ad around right now.
So all the above,
Okay.
which is one of the reasons that we have a sleeve of stocks that we look at like this, because you get something that just gets too cheap, right? Where it just doesn't make sense. And then what you can see happen with something like that is you can see it get re-rated really quickly. And then when the stock starts performing better, more people start talking about it. People start going, oh, let's go back to American Eagle. Maybe I'll be. So one of the things we're looking into right now is whether or not we want to take a bigger position. And that's going to be determined on more research we're doing on management. We're trying to decipher whether this is part of a coordinated ad campaign, right? Whether it's evidence of them making smart decisions at a corporate level. And if it is, I could easily see us leaning into it because it's far more cheap. But I think it all happens. I mean, you have a stock that, the company wasn't doing great, but it's not like they were on the edge of insolvency. They were dirt cheap. If they get even a moderate uptick of sales over the next couple quarters, the earnings they make off that are going to be a huge boost to the bottom line. I think they probably just became one of the favorite back to school shopping locations for all of MAGA.
Great
So, I
timing.
mean, yeah. And I mean, I think that I think it's really hard to look at that thing and not think, again, especially where it's trading, when you look at how cheap the stock currently is. I mean, that thing, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see that trading between 30 to 40 here in the next, 3, 4 weeks.
Yeah,
That's
it's
not a prediction. I'm not telling anybody to go buy it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It is fascinating, though, all the thought process that goes into, like, hey, should we get this? What's going on with management? Is this a long-term thing? It's just, you know, that's why you do what you do. I don't do that. So I don't think about any of that stuff. Can I ask you a personal question? You can tell me to kick rocks. You know, one of the things that bothers me about this is, like, this idea that because Sydney Sweeney has good genes, like, only, you know, we're suggesting that, like, blonde white women with blue eyes is, like, that's the ideal gene, right? And it's so dumb. Like, I don't know if you're willing. Your wife is a freaking bombshell. And she's, like, a former Miss Washington, right? And she's black. Did she have a certain reaction to it? Because, like, I would say, like, your wife has great genes, right? And so I just don't know why everybody's, like, there are so many different types of people who can have great genes. Like, somebody might have a great nose and I'd be like, wow, you have great genes. Like, oh, your nose or your cheekbones or whatever it is. Did she feel a certain way about it that she's brought up to you?
No, and as a matter of fact, she's kind of grown up. It's funny because my wife is very much does not fit into the norm, but in a lot of ways that she does. So she was raised by a single white woman. So she's mixed. She's half white, half black. Her father is still doing a 20-year term in a Florida penitentiary for fraud. So she grew up on the way lower end of the socioeconomic scale. Mom worked two jobs because she refused to be on welfare. And so she was raised in an environment of this is the land of opportunity and there are no excuses. Hmm. And, you know, she's got her MBA from the University of Washington. She was Miss Washington. And so she sees all of these things where you know, her biggest reaction to things like that, she jokingly calls it white people problems, you know, because she's like, she goes, all I hear are these rich white people making up all these fabricated excuses about why these black kids can't achieve the same thing. Yeah. And she's like, you know, I graduated valedictorian of my high school class. I didn't need any help kicking white kids' asses, you know, pardon my language, but It's that soft racism that she responds the most to and that I get the most incensed about because, you know, my kids don't always get recognized. I mean, I think when you see my kids walk in, you know that they're clearly some other ethnicity other than just white. Mm-hmm. But I don't want them having any excuses. And, you know, that's the other thing. Her and I talk about it all the time. I think it's really important to do these self-assessments to know if you're on the right side of history, right? And one of the things I hear about the left is all I hear them doing is telling young children why they can't succeed.
100%. You know, 100%.
A friend is somebody that tells you you can and shows you how. An enemy is someone that tells you you can't and tells you not to waste your time. Hmm. Right? So if you think the left is your friends, run them past that simple litmus test, right? Ask me if you think it's going to be better for black kids that we no longer offer accelerated math in public school. Because of course, Brandy, black children are not smart enough to figure out accelerated math. It's so disgustingly racist, it makes me want to vomit. And when you're backing those kinds of policies, and you can simultaneously turn a Sydney Sweeney jeans ad into a Nazi dog whistle, your brain is completely malfunctioning and you're no longer useful in the decision-making process for human beings. So I'm not saying we should get rid of you, but I'm saying that we should completely disregard your opinion because it's meaningless.
Oh, it's crazy. And it is, you know, to act as if that, like, American Eagle has never had anyone except white blonde women with blue eyes in their ads, and, like, you know, it's
anybody wants that. Like, let's start here. Let's go ask the average girl in high school or college if she'd prefer a slightly bigger rear end or a flat rear end. A callback to the 70s and 60s supermodels, right? Like, you're looking at the celebration of diversity culturally everywhere around you, and you think someone's hearkening back to Nazi dog whistles? Mm-hmm. It's ludicrous on the face of it.
It is. So I'm happy that American Eagle stood their ground. I would have been incredibly disappointed if they backtracked. So they didn't, and they're now, you know, seeing the result of that. And I can't wait to see their earnings for the next couple quarters and see how that works out for them, because I also think it's an incentive, right, for other companies to shed this sort of
totally.
Wokeness, right? If you see these companies yeah. doing really well, especially a company that wasn't doing particularly well. All right, in our Zoo segment, where's the money at? So we are getting a ton of money in from tariffs, as President Trump said we would, something to the tune of $28 billion in July, which is a ton. So the question is, where should that money go? Where do you think that money should go?
Look, I think that that money, if I was king for a day, I think that I would probably earmark that money. And my first knee-jerk reaction is just apply it to the debt and pay down the debt.
Okay.
But then I say that, especially coming off the conversation that we were just having. And I honestly think when I look at our debt problem, this is not going to be a debt problem that we resolve in a traditional way, meaning that we pay this off. I don't think that we have the discipline. I don't think that we have the cultural... I don't think we're united enough to pull off something like that, and the subsequent pain and discomfort that comes with cutting spending and then holding those cuts for a period of time. So I'm actually kind of leaning toward the idea of investing it, and investing it culturally, much in the same way that we made investments in World War II. You know, I think about, I'm always so, I mean, Mr. Doge, right? I'm always paranoid about turning any level of spending over to the government. At the same time, I think under the right circumstances, we need to be open to it, because I would encourage people to look at things like, you know, the Hoover Dam, mm-hmm. things like the highway system in this country, things like the internet, things like GPS. We need things like that to get out of the incredibly irresponsible fiscal and monetary policies that we've been executing for the last better part of the last 80 years, right? And so I think we're facing issues that require more forethought and more wisdom than just, oh, let's go pay down the debt. I love the Democratic feel and the government being accountable feel behind the whole, hey, let's issue a tariff dividend to everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't need a tariff dividend. I think there are way too many people in the country that don't need a tariff dividend. And I think that we'd be much better off. Let's use that money that nobody was counting on to make investments that we didn't think we could make. And what would some of those investments be? Well, I would say the retooling of the education system first. And I'm not talking about starting at colleges. I'm talking about starting it lower than that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the injection of STEM labs into every inner city school there is. I want them on every flipping corner, right? Higher mathematical classes, greater, you know, civics classes, history, to start actually educating people again, because that's the other thing that people, especially the woke folks in this country, need to. Like, hey, you can be woke all you want. It's kind of like that old joke. You don't have to believe in gravity, because trust me, it believes in you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my attitude, is like, hey, you guys can sit around here and think that the priority in public schools is to have kids that wear furry tails and litter boxes and bathrooms. Okay, if you want to keep going down that path, we're not gonna have a pot to in a few years. Because China is going to lap us so badly, right? And we are falling so meaningfully behind. So that to me would be the biggest thing, is I would be using those funds. If I was king for a day, I'd be using those funds to begin the retooling and the reformation of a primarily state-driven educational system that parents and communities have far more input on and far more control over.
Yeah, and that makes, you know, when you look at COVID funding, for instance, it was like this influx of cash that came into states and counties and cities, and they spent it on nonsense. I mean, they spent it on the dumbest stuff. And now we're in this massive budget deficit, you know, West Coast, all the states, blue states. And we're trying to find, I mean, they're having to close down bridges because they haven't fixed them. And so, I mean, if you were to have taken COVID funds and said, hey, we have this money, like, hey, let's, we got that bridge that we haven't had any money to fix. Like, let's just fix that. It's a one-time cost, whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking, it's $112 billion so far this year to come in during tariffs. The $28 billion in June and then $29 billion in July is a record, a monthly record for tariffs. You have all this money coming in. But at the same time, I don't think either of us would argue that tariffs haven't impacted Americans at all. And they're talking about $2,400 kind of refund checks to Americans. So, I mean, is there an argument to be made that maybe we give some of the middle class Americans some of that money back?
Yeah, I think there's certainly an argument to be made. The only reason I don't knee jerk again and just say give it to them is I would want to be looking into other things that we could do that would benefit the lower income classes in this country for longer.
Long-term.
Meaning, and the reason I say that, and at the risk of sounding like you know, somebody that's the head of the UAW or Jimmy Hoffa or something like that. We've made decisions, and you can go back as far as the 90s. I heard somebody the other day try to blame this on the Republicans, which I thought was really funny, because it was actually, this one falls squarely on the shoulders of consensus, where, right, it's one party would have you believe, well, when they're making the rules, it's all bad. You know, the funny thing is the greatest disasters in this country usually happen when the parties agree with each other.
Yeah.
You know, that's usually when the fix is in. But if you look at the policies that we've put in place for the, regardless of what party was in power over the last 40 to 50 years, they've been decisions that come at the benefit of capital and the cost of labor. Okay. Now, I think you can make an argument when we started going that way, i.e. the late 70s, early 80s, that that was a trajectory we needed to go on at that point in certain things. Now, I think you've gone around to the other side of it where you've made too many of these decisions for too long. I mean, and people will be like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I'll give you a really good example. We just came out of the greatest economic shock and probably the greatest public health crisis, maybe in the country's history, certainly in the last 100 years, right? The left was the political apparatus that was stepping up to defend big pharma.
Yeah.
So if you want to know, now I'm old enough to remember in the 80s, I don't know if you could find a registered Democrat that could say anything positive about big pharma. Okay. My point is not taking shot at the people on the left. My point is that culturally, the reason I think that has happened is because it's kind of become the golden rule, which is it's turned into like a uniparty that is governed by whoever's got the gold makes the rules, right? And so I am not the lower end of the folks that are doing the hard work and paying. I'm all about helping them in more important ways, or in substantive ways. I just want to be really careful that if we add up that $2,400 that we'd be giving them, I want to make sure that we make changes that benefit them every year, as opposed to just, right, we're not just trying to throw some money at their way to win an election, right? We want to try to undo some of the deeply, you know, unfair and unthoughtful things that have impacted folks like them for the better part of the last 40 years.
Yeah, it's an unusual amount of money to be coming into our coffers. So maybe we do something unusual for America, something that we wouldn't, you know, budget for in a regular budget cycle. So I like that, you know, some thought and something that will cement President Trump's legacy for many years.
There you
and I'm
go.
Not talking about adding his face to Mount Rushmore. Let's just leave Mount Rushmore as it is. Okay.
Oh man.
All right. I want to end with something a little closer to home. I was telling you about this and you had a good chuckle when I read the headline. This is an opinion piece from the Seattle Times. Seattle's middle class is becoming scarce. So there's a couple elements to this. One of the problems with how they're calculating this is it takes a lot more to be middle class in Seattle, right? I mean, you could be making six figures and you're not necessarily middle class. The numbers are pretty high. But you were laughing because you said basically everything Seattle's done is designed to push the middle class out of Seattle.
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at And again, this isn't a political statement. I approach this purely from looking at it from an economic standpoint. Okay, when you look at policies that are enacted by, now, to be fair to both of these cities, one of the reasons Seattle's expensive is because it's gorgeous, right?
Yeah,
and there are a lot of, and an unusual amount of really big successful businesses. When you look at the amount of people we have in this area, it is bizarre how many huge, incredible businesses have come out of this area,
yeah,
right? World-changing businesses. So I think there is something in the water here. We punch way above our weight class economically when you look at the number of people that we've got. So I think that's part of it. But I think the bigger part is when you look at the policies that are liberal policies, especially on the economic side, they're all things engineered at the big bad guy.
Yeah.
Right? So the thought is we're going to hit business where it hurts. And what they forget is 60% of the jobs in this country are provided by small businesses. So what you've just done, yes, we both have to pay that cost, but the bigger a business is, and I mean this purely by, you could look at a balance sheet, you could look at it just geography, right? The further a business is spread out, the easier it is for that business to absorb inefficient and ridiculous economic policy in one area.
Yeah.
Where it isn't possible for a business to overcome economic lunacy in a small area is a small family-owned private business, right? They don't have the choice. If I'm in and out, I can just pick up and leave California, move my headquarters to Tennessee, and the only real impact it'll probably have on my corporation over the next 2 years is more earnings will drop to the bottom line because I'm not paying California all this money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you flip around, you look at a small family-run firm, what do? They're done.
Yeah.
They're done. And they've got to close up shop, which probably costs them their office building or the land that they probably purchased 20 years ago. They got to walk away from that. Where interest rates are now, they're probably selling it for a fraction that they purchased it at. So you look at all these policies that they enact. You look at $30 minimum wage. Well, look, what can absorb that? If you have 1,500 restaurant locations across the United States, which average $14 an hour minimum wage, one or two locations in Western Washington that charge you $30 isn't a problem. If you own Dick's Burger Joints, it is.
Yep.
Right? So and this is one of the things that frustrates me so much about so many good-intentioned liberals, right? Talking to them about economics is a lot like talking to my kids about it.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I love where your heart's at. I understand your intention, but you need to spend some time studying the unintended consequences and the pernicious impacts they can have. And more importantly, be sensitive to it. If we're passing economic policy in this state that's consistent, we should see some pretty consistent outcomes. Well, we are, and none of them are good. So stop. This isn't an ideological competition, right? We're not two churches, we shouldn't be anyway, that are vying for parishioners. We should be making public policy that works the best for everybody,
yeah,
right? So lay your political ideology down for a second and ask yourself, are these decisions and these policies helping the average working man in Seattle? I don't know what data point you could point to that would say that they are.
Well, and it cracks me up that this is printed in the Seattle Times, and they paint it as this like, oh, woe is the middle class. But this is the entity that's constantly like, the rich are evil, all these rich people suck, let's pass all these anti-business policies. And then you're surprised that there is increasingly not an affordable place in Seattle for the middle class to call home. I mean, of course, when you look at the state politics, like, you just start to chip away at their ability to live in a place like Seattle, you know, increasing gas prices, increase in energy prices, increase in food prices, all the result of taxes we're supposed to believe are like progressive or whatever it is. And then they move out of the city, you know, and so you've got these middle class homes fleeing the city, and then they could turn around and it's a sick cycle because they blame big businesses again. Oh, well, you know, maybe they could have afforded to live here if the businesses had paid them more. And it's like, oh my God, you guys don't get it.
Well, I mean, look at property taxes and gasoline alone.
Yep. Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Yes.
Look at what you could do to the average family in the Seattle area making between $100,000 to $200,000. I kid you not, by adjusting those two things, not completely eliminating them, but by right-sizing them, you could put another $10,000 a year into the pocket of those parents, which would allow them the ability to potentially send their kid to a private school because they don't want to put up with the nonsense in the public schools, allow them to move, allow them to open a new location for their business, all these different things. How many people in the state of Washington realize that the actual cost of their gasoline is below $2.50 a gallon? Does anybody know that? Right? Do they realize how ridiculous their property taxes are on a national average? I mean, and then so you see all these policies. Oh, it's big bad business. And I'm like, big bad business doubled the cost of gasoline? No, you did that. Yeah. Right? You did. You doubled the cost of all these things that nobody can afford not to pay for every day, right? Which is so look at the crackdown on energy. Whenever anybody hears them talking about clean energy and carbon emissions and all that kind of stuff, what you should simultaneously hear is we do not care about impoverished people. We do not care about their ability to cool and heat their homes. And we do not care how many of them die, because that is effectually what they're saying. The number one thing in the world that you can tie to poverty and death rates and all that kind of stuff, energy costs. Hmm. Energy costs. The lower you make energy, the more abundant it is and the lower it costs, mortality rates of all kinds dive, right? So when you hear people say, well, we got to save the planet. Well, what does that mean to you, right? Because if I'm a little kid over in Tanzania and I haven't eaten in 2 weeks, I'm not really that concerned about saving the planet, man. I'd like something to eat.
Yeah,
you know?
I'd like to live past the next 2 months.
Yeah. And then I know we're not talking about people in Tanzania, we're talking about middle class, but you can see like the avalanche of the unintended consequences of these horrific decisions, right? Which is, you know, affordable housing in Seattle is another one. Look what that's done. So, I mean, they can try to blame big bad business all they want. But the one thing I would challenge people to say is when you see companies like Bartels, Walgreens, and Starbucks shutting locations in a city, if evil, big, bad U.S. business can't afford to have a location in your city, how is any mom and pop?
Amen. Or how is any citizen? You know, they can't weather the increases. People aren't going to be able to weather the increases. We don't need to be protected. The middle class does not need to be protected from big business. They need to be protected from the government.
I love that line. We have shown that. The American entrepreneur and innovator has proven that a million times. If you'll stay out of my pocket, I can take those guys down.
Yep.
What I can't do is I can't fight you both at the same time.
100%. 100%. If only we ruled the world, Zach. Democratic, of course. Democratic,
of course.
All right, buddy. People. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks. Fun as always.